Ever get that feeling, you know that feeling, where you think something's off? Like life in a small town, it's not always as simple as it seems. And that's exactly what we're diving into today with Peaks and Valleys.
Oh, I know that feeling well.
This novel takes us right into the heart of El Pajaro Mountain, a seemingly quiet town where a young woman, Jenna, is trying to escape her past.
Right from the beginning, the author does this amazing job of setting the scene. Jenna arrives in El Pajaro Mountain, and you immediately get this sense of her desperation. She's fleeing an abusive marriage, seeking refuge, anonymity, really.
And it's more than just a fresh start she's looking for. She's carrying so much baggage. You see these glimpses of her past, like that tense train ride, the nights spent sleeping in parks. It's clear she's desperate for a safe haven.
Absolutely. And that's how she ends up at McCarthy's, this rundown restaurant that becomes her lifeline in a way.
It's interesting how the author uses the setting, particularly that neglected garden behind McCarthy's, as this reflection of Jenna's journey.
Oh, I love that you picked up on that. It's subtle, but so powerful.
She starts cleaning it up, planting seeds, and nurturing this new life. It's symbolic, isn't it? Like she's pulling weeds, but from her life.
Exactly. It's that whole idea of growth and renewal, finding hope in unexpected places.
Yeah.
And then there's Sean, the owner of McCarthy's. He's got that gruff exterior, but deep down.
Yeah, you can tell he has a good heart. He sees something in Jenna, a strength maybe, and offers her a job, a place to stay.
It's that kind of unexpected support that can make all the difference for someone like Jenna, who's been so isolated, so controlled. And, you know, Sean's past, his own experience with homelessness, it allows him to connect with her on a deeper level.
It reminds us that sometimes the people we least expect can become our greatest allies. But before we get too far into Jenna's story, we need to rewind a bit. There's a pivotal event that rocks El Pajaro Mountain, a hit-and-run accident.
Oh, yes. That scene grabs your attention right from the get-go. We've got Ray Becker, a cyclist, speeding downhill, and he's trying to avoid a woman with a stroller who's in the bike lane.
A recipe for disaster.
Exactly. He swerves, loses control, and collides with a truck. It's tragic, no doubt, but here's where it gets really interesting. This accident happens near the site of a suspicious fire that breaks out later that same day.
Talk about convenient timing, right? And that's where Brady enters the picture, a local reporter covering both the accident and the fire. Little does he know how entangled his path will become with Jenna's and this whole web of secrets.
Brady's role is so crucial because he represents that search for truth. He's piecing together clues, just like we are, trying to make sense of these events that, on the surface, seem completely unconnected.
And as he digs deeper, he finds himself drawn to Jenna, adding another layer of complexity to this whole tangled situation. But let's get back to the fire for a moment. The more we learn about this alleged arsonist, Ray Becker, the more suspicious things become.
Absolutely. We find out he rented a truck, brought black paint for his bike, almost like he was planning to vanish afterward. And then there's that wad of cash found on him. It screams premeditation. Someone bankrolled this whole thing.
It's like a puzzle, isn't it? We're trying to figure out who wanted that land burned and why. And this is where those seemingly insignificant details start to matter. Remember that name, Skilland, that piqued Jenna's interest?
Ah, yes. It seems like a throwaway detail, but it becomes a huge turning point in the story.
Right. Because Skilland Builders, the company Jenna remembers, is owned by none other than Richard White, the very same man who wanted to develop the land where the fire occurred.
And who does Jenna remember seeing on the train? Someone she found both intriguing and unnerving. Richard White. The pieces start to fall into place.
It's like one of those moments in a mystery where the detective connects the dots on the evidence board. Suddenly, Richard White is looking like our prime suspect. But remember, we're still early in the story, and things are about to get even more complicated for Jenna. Just as she starts to find her footing in El Pajaro Mountain, her past comes calling.
And it's not a gentle knock on the door either.
No kidding. Imagine finally starting over, finding a job, a glimmer of romance, and bam, your abuser is standing in your apartment.
Yeah. Talk about a nightmare. That's exactly what Jenna's facing now. And he's not just there to talk, is he? Mick, Jenna's husband, he uses those flyers she made, the ones for the Irish Music Festival with Sean's address on them. Talk about manipulative.
I mean, talk about resourceful too, right? But in the worst possible way, it's like the author is highlighting how abusers maintain control even from a distance. It's chilling.
It really is, and it speaks to the constant fear Jenna carries with her, the feeling of being watched, never truly safe.
Right, so now she's in this impossible situation. Her escape has inadvertently led to Brady's friend Heather getting hurt.
Yeah, she's between a rock and a hard place.
Exactly. She's terrified, but she feels like she can't go to the police.
She thinks they won't believe her story. things coming forward will only make things worse.
So what does she do? She teams up with Brady. They become amateur detectives trying to retrace Ray Becker's steps, trying to find out who hired him to start that fire.
It's classic detective work, right?
Yeah.
You're looking for those seemingly insignificant details that everyone else missed.
Like that gas can. Remember that? The truck rental guy conveniently forgets about it.
Oh, yeah. But Tina, the leopard lady, remembers it perfectly. She tells Jenna and Brady that Becker had rented a gas can along with the truck.
And don't forget the detail about Becker having those water bottles filled with gasoline. I mean, who does that?
Right. It's those little inconsistencies, the things that don't quite add up that often lead to the truth. And in this case, it seems pretty clear that Becker was planning on setting more fires, not just the one on Skillen's land.
Which makes you wonder, what was so important about that particular piece of land? Why go to all this trouble?
Exactly. And why was he so fixated on that number? 276.
Right, 276 acres, the exact acreage he wanted burned. There's got to be more to it, right?
Well, it definitely suggests there was a specific motive behind the arson. Like, maybe White needed to clear a certain amount of land for his development project to be profitable.
Even if it meant destroying endangered species habitat.
Exactly. It really makes you think about the lengths people will go to for profit. And Jenna finds herself right in the middle of it all.
Remember, she's not some detached observer. This isn't just a news story for her. Jenna is trying to rebuild her life while outrunning her past.
And if she doesn't clear her name, who knows what Mick might do when they let him go.
Talk about pressure. But Jenna's a fighter, and armed with this new information about White, she decides to take a chance. She goes to confront him at his office, hoping to get a confession.
That's a bold move. Well, and let's be honest, it's incredibly risky.
It's like walking into the lion's den. And White, well, he's not exactly who he pretends to be.
Oh, not at all. He's cunning, manipulative, and as we see, he's willing to do whatever it takes to keep his secrets buried.
It's a terrifying scene. Jenna almost gets taken away in White's car. He's practically forcing her in at gunpoint.
Talk about a close call. But even in that moment of sheer terror, Jenna, she manages to stall for time. She's quick on her feet, pretending to be sick.
And that's when things take an unexpected turn. Remember Marcus, that quiet teenager who helped Jenna in the garden? He steps in, tackles White, and gives Jenna a chance to escape.
Talk about a hero. It's incredible. You've got this seemingly insignificant character who ends up playing such a pivotal role.
It's the underdog taking on the powerful, and in this case, right prevails.
It's a satisfying moment for the reader, for sure. Mm-hmm. And it really highlights the fact that courage can come from the most unexpected places.
Marcus didn't have to do that. He could have just walked away, minded his own business, but he didn't. He saw someone in trouble and acted.
And his actions have huge consequences for everyone involved. It's like setting off a chain reaction.
Like a line of dominoes. It's like, whoa, the tables have turned. You've got White Mr. Control Freak suddenly finding himself in a position of vulnerability.
Yeah, the author does a great job of portraying that shift in power. White's used to calling the shots, getting his way, but this is different.
It's like all those secrets he's been trying to bury, they're starting to come to light. And it all leads back to Marcus, that moment of bravery.
It's a ripple effect, right?
Yeah.
Marcus's confession is like that final domino falling. It sets in motion a chain of events that ultimately brings the whole house of cards down around White.
And it clears Mick's name, which, let's be honest, we weren't expecting. I mean, at the beginning of this whole thing, Mick seemed like the villain.
Right. But the story takes these unexpected turns, and suddenly, the reader is forced to reevaluate everything they thought they knew.
And that's what makes this book so captivating. The truth unfolds gradually, like peeling back layers of an onion.
Absolutely. It keeps you guessing until the very end. And it reminds us that sometimes things aren't always what they seem. We have to be willing to look beyond the surface, connect those seemingly unrelated dots.
And sometimes it takes a bit of courage to face those uncomfortable truths. Like, remember Jenna's initial reluctance to get involved? She could have walked away, but she didn't.
She didn't. And thank goodness for that, right? Because her persistence, her determination to find the truth, it's what ultimately brings justice to El Pajaro Mountain.
But let's not forget, Jenna went through a lot in this story. I mean, she confronted her abuser, uncovered a major conspiracy, and witnessed a man almost get shot.
And yet she comes out stronger on the other side. She finds her voice, her strength.
It's like she's finally breaking free from the shackles of her past. She's found a community that cares about her, people she can trust.
And she might have even found love along the way.
Yeah.
That final scene with Jenna and Brady making breakfast together, it's hopeful. like a new chapter beginning.
It is. It leaves you with a sense of peace, a sense of possibility. It reminds you that even after the darkest storms, the sun eventually breaks through.
And sometimes those rays of sunshine come from the most unexpected places. So as we wrap up our deep dive into peaks and valleys, I'm curious, what are some of the key takeaways that resonated with you?
For me, it's that reminder that life is full of surprises, good and bad. We can't always control what happens to us, but we can control how we respond. And sometimes the smallest actions, like a moment of bravery or a leap of faith, can have the biggest impact on our own lives and the lives of those around us.
It's beautifully put. It's a story about resilience, about hope, and about the enduring strength of the human spirit.
And sometimes that's exactly the kind of story we need.